we have rituals for our children as they grow up. For example, we do birthday rituals at special birthdays. At 10 is the first one, it's double digits.
This is Shaping Families, and I'm Burton Buller. I'm happy to introduce you today to Gareth Brandt, the father of four kids aged 10 to 21. He'll talk about the special role and challenges of being a Christian father today.
And I'm Melody Davis. Gareth is the author of a recent book, Under Construction, Reframing Men's Spirituality. My ears perked up when Gareth talked about rituals. I think that it's so important for families and to name the little things we do as rituals or traditions.
Gareth cycles to work every day in Abbotsford, British Columbia, where he teaches practical theology at Columbia Bible College. His educational background includes degrees in spirituality, theology, and psychology, with an emphasis on the spiritual formation of young adults.
To start off, we asked Gareth if he had some specific ways dads can help raise families, concrete ways to be involved. But he wanted to change our question.
First of all, dads don't help raise families. That sounds like somebody else is doing it and dads are helping. Part of who we are as fathers is we're child raisers. We don't babysit our kids, although men sometimes talk like that. I have to stay home and babysit tonight. So one very tangible specific is change our language, because language is a powerful shaper. Yes, the involvement is a big one. One of the ways I've been involved with my kids' lives is coaching, soccer coaching. And it's a way to be involved in your kids' lives and also to get to know other parents and kids. A very specific thing is working on your own personal issues. And the third one that I mentioned, I think that's specific, is be involved in a church community. That's often not seen as raising kids, but as the famous saying goes, it takes a village to raise a child. And I think that the church is that kind of village.
You mentioned rituals around special birthdays.
I'm a fairly ritualistic, symbolic kind of person. I think it's very important that we have rituals for our children as they grow up. For example, we do rituals at special birthdays. At 10 is the first one, it's double digits, and our children always get a watch. We give them the gift and talk about the gift of time that they've been given, and give them the watch as a reminder of that. At 13 is, of course, an important time. It's the beginning of the teens, as well as usually puberty is going on at this time, so that's an overnight. And just talk about sexuality and kind of growing up. At 16, it's the opposite sex parent, and that's where we give a necklace with a symbolic pendant, and we talk about sexual purity and waiting for sex till marriage and so on. But those are kind of important birthdays to mark important parts of growth and development.
Gareth does something unusual at age 19 that you may think is a bit risky.
19 is drinking age in British Columbia. I took the boys to a pub, and I want them to learn responsibility. And I say, I'm not taking you here because I want you to drink, but because you can go here now. That's a new freedom. And so we talk about those new freedoms, voting and other things that come with adulthood. And I say, we are now co-men. I want to treat you like an adult, and adulthood comes with new responsibilities.
So why did you write a book for men on spirituality?
Well, I didn't set out to write a book. I set out on a personal quest. It began with a sabbatical, and I had a number of more academic projects, and one of my personal projects was to read men's spirituality. I'd never really read much. I thought, I need to give this a fair shake. It was part of my midlife journey. And I started reading and journaling, and realized through conversation that a number of my friends and colleagues were experiencing similar kinds of restlessness and searching for what does it mean to be a spiritual man. And so I gathered a group of friends together, and we met once a month. I would send them stuff I was writing, and then we would talk about it. And so that is how it started, as a as a personal kind of friendship adventure. But I call it a men's book for those men who don't read men's books by an author who didn't. In a nutshell, though, it's attempting to provide, I suppose you could say in quotation marks, an alternative men's spirituality that seeks to rely on biblical narrative and is based on pacifism and egalitarianism.
What didn't you like about other men's books?
I found that most books in the genre of men's literature were using ancient myths and modern movies more so than the Bible, in particular a narrative approach to scripture. And secondly, they tend to use the warrior as the primary archetype, and as a pacifist I find that somewhat troubling and wanted a more constructive image to guide men's spirituality than the warrior. And even secular and more mainline Christian books tend to be quite individualistic, kind of focusing on men's self-fulfillment. So I wanted it more communal and egalitarian.
What is your own story related to spirituality?
I've been on that quest all my life to find what it means to be a spiritual man. Probably it started in a more tangible, overt way during in midlife. But I would say, yes, even in adolescence, the search for identity was between I was involved in sports, which is a more traditional kind of male outlet, and at the same time, I'm a poet, and so which is not a traditional male activity. And so that probably illustrates that struggle. But I would say in midlife is when it started more tangibly and overtly. I've never been the kind to go to men's things, and yet in midlife I found, well, I am a man, I need to explore this some more and at least give the literature a fair shake.
What issues do you see the family facing today?
Fragmentation is one, and isolation from each other. Families are so busy that they're not eating together, they're not involved with each other. And for me, that's always been a very important value, is the family dinner table. For fathers in particular, it's very important to be involved in your family's life. That's where I live my spirituality right now. Obviously differently now that kids are moving out. Both oldest boys have been away at college. But I see that some kind of involvement being very, very important.
How can the church be helpful with this fragmentation?
Part of the same phenomenon is that we are not connected with other people in general. And I was going to say the other thing there that really helps is church involvement, to have other adults involved with our children. Being part of a church community has been very important for our kids. They've all had, the oldest three at least, have had mentors. That's been very beneficial because as you get into your adolescence, obviously your reliance on your parents becomes lessened. And so then to have had a natural connection with other adults in our faith community has been very important for us as parents.
How are men responding to your book?
Very positively. I'm having a lot of men come up to me and say, just kind of paraphrasing, thank you for telling my story. I've felt similarly, that I just haven't felt affirmed as a spiritual man. And some who have read other stuff and haven't found themselves, and others who have never read anything and have felt like I've articulated something for them that's been going on.
Thank you very much, Gareth. The title again is Under Construction, Reframing Men's Spirituality, and you'll be able to find it from links at our website, shapingfamilies.com. In a minute, we'll also give you a phone number you can call. First, we'd like to hear from Sam Heatwell, reading from a book by Jim Fairfield, Frog Hollow Journal. Jim recalls his own teen years.
I remember serene evenings as a teenager, biking with new friends on the streets of Winnipeg. The soft night air washing heat from the pavement as we flashed from island to island of light in the street lamp glow. Around the corner at the Green Gables High School, kids gathered for as much serenity as a Wurlitzer cranked up to full volume would allow. The Green Gables presented awesome possibilities for me as an adolescent. Here the in crowd met after school to exchange pleasantries, leer at the girls, and consume hamburgers and French fries. Even to be seen in the place guaranteed one a sense of elan, a feeling of having arrived, an arrogance of belonging. For me, a recent transplant from the country and a year younger than most of my classmates, to be taken there by a friend was to put a foot on the ladder of social identity. A neighbor, Herb Luckhurst, engineered the breakthrough for me. Herb was his own man, unflappable, low-key, ready always with a well-turned phrase to suit the occasion. On the other hand, I was too much the friendly puppy, caught between loneliness and social naivety, wanting to belong and wondering if I could, hurting for friends, but unable to judge character. It's a dangerous state to be in. So what do we say to our children? If it takes a lifetime to move into the image of God, what can we pass on to our children to help them through these dangerous states? I suspect the shape of much religious practice in the Hollow came about as parents tried to wrap a package of understanding to pass on to their offspring. And kids have always compared what their parents believe with how they live, a risk of magnitude for both parent and child. It's one thing to urge a child to believe in God, quite another to direct that belief through a forest of doctrine. An attractive shortcut for a parent is to apply lots of pressure. There's an immediate response. But faith is such an undeveloped muscle, it could tear under that kind of load. It would be better for our children to see us living out a few basics. God includes all that we know of reality and more. His presence can fill up our soul/psyche and make sense out of what goes on around us. Compassion, forgiveness, and humility give evidence of God's reality. Spite, envy, and mercilessness are denials. Living in God's reality calls for choice and commitment to our evolution in the new community, the new culture of God. It's a discipline for a lifetime of growth. Mistakes, wrong turns, and lapses are to be expected. The renewed choice to live in God's reality by heeding His Spirit brings forgiveness and redirection. The strength to live God's way, with God's life, is freely available to any human, anywhere, anytime. It's a matter of choice. Anything more is gravy.
Thanks, Sam. Again, you'll find links at the ShapingFamilies.com website to the book which Sam reads from, Frog Hollow Journal, and to Gareth's book, Under Construction, Reframing Men's Spirituality.
You can also call us to purchase either book. The 800 number is 800-245-7894. That's 800-245-7894. Call Monday through Friday from 9 to 6 Eastern Time to reach a customer service person.
We also have a free pamphlet available called 10 Ways to Be a Better Dad, and you can get it in Spanish or English. It's a great tool to use in any men's ministry you have. One copy is free. We request that from the current offer button on our website, shapingfamilies.com.
Or write to us at Shaping Families, Box 22, Harrisonburg, Virginia, 22803. That's Box 22, Harrisonburg, Virginia, 22803. We'd love to hear from you or have you join in supporting this program.
Next week, we'll be back to talk to Joyce Mercer, a seminary professor and author of a book, Girl Talk, God Talk. Until then, this is Burton Buller.
And Melody Davis, reminding you of the question asked by our speaker today. How do I walk the way of Christ? How do I walk the way of peace in everyday life with my family? Shaping Families is a program of the Mennonite Churches produced by Menno Media.